This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, we finally got to hear from Don Berwick, the newly appointed director for Medicare and Medicaid. Although it was in the context of a grueling Senate Finance Committee session, it was compelling to hear him defend criticism about the new health law and denounce efforts to repeal it.
Well, Mark, Dr. Berwick is certainly no stranger to grueling conversations. He headed up IHI and tried to change the course of the entire healthcare system to make it more safe and of higher quality. And only an hour and a half was allowed for the session by Max Baucus, the Democrat from Montana. Some Republicans and Democrats alike would have liked more time. And there's still some lingering resentment that the appointment of Dr. Berwick and his confirmation as head of CMS was done in a recess appointment by President Obama, which of course bypassed the Congress.
Oh, that bypassing of the confirmation process never makes it easier. But Dr. Berwick is hard at work. He's already begun to apply some of his innovative ideas for making medical care more efficient and less expensive. CMS finally launched the Innovation Center we've been hearing so much about, with four initial demonstration projects that focus on coordinating Medicare beneficiaries' care.
And did you notice that that office now has a new head, Dr. Richard Gilfillan? And I was not surprised at all that he comes out of the Geisinger system, served as its past president. He's a family physician by profession. We have heard so much about the route to success in health reform being about integrating healthcare services and coordinating care for individual patients. No surprise he came out of a system that's really been a leader in that, and I'm looking forward to hearing more from him.
They are a font of knowledge out there at Geisinger. Well, now let's turn to today's guest, Donna Shalala, who is currently president of the University of Miami, but she also served in the Clinton administration as their Secretary of Health and Human Services. President Shalala is no stranger to seeking out ways to improve America's healthcare system. She's also chair of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Initiative on the Future of Nursing at the Institute of Medicine, and we're happy she can join us today.
And no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. Subscribe to iTunes and get our show regularly downloaded, or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. And you can become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with President Shalala, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. The Department of Health and Human Services issued the long-awaited regulations that spell out how much of the premium dollar insurers must spend on patients' health care, also known as the medical loss ratio. Starting in January 2011, the federal regulation will require health insurers to spend at least 80% of premiums on health care for individuals and those enrolled in small group plans, and 85% for those enrolled in large group coverage. The new rules, which followed the National Association of Insurance Commissioners' recommendations, will prevent insurers from wasting valuable premiums on overhead, marketing, and executive bonuses. Nancy Andaparl, director of the White House Office of Health Reform, says there's even more good news here for consumers.
This will be transparent. You will know. It'll be public. You'll know how much of your premium dollars your insurance company is spending towards your health care.
Insurance companies that do not meet the medical loss ratio standard will be required to provide rebates to their consumers starting in 2012. The Department of Health also announced that it's putting $290 million more into the National Health Service Corps, the program that helps primary care clinicians pay off student loans in exchange for 2 years of service in underserved areas. The expansion is projected to allow 11,000 more primary care providers to participate. Right before the Thanksgiving holiday recess, senators agreed on extending the current Medicare physician payment rates in an effort to avert a 23% cut in Medicare provider reimbursement scheduled for December 1st. The measure represents a unanimous agreement negotiated by Democrat Max Baucus and Republican Charles Grassley. Senator Baucus and Senator Grassley said the one-month extension would provide time for Congress to work out a deal on a longer extension in December. They said they are working to secure, quote, a mutually agreeable way to pay for the year-long cost of the physician formula as well as other extenders. The measure now goes to the House, which is scheduled to take it up after the Thanksgiving recess. This week on Conversations, we're looking to the role nurses play in the future of healthcare. At 3 million strong, the nursing workforce has the potential to significantly improve the quality of healthcare and Americans' access to it. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Institute of Medicine published a new report on this very subject. One aspect of the report focuses on the role nurses play in primary care managing chronic disease, particularly in high-risk, underserved populations. One challenge for healthcare today is to adequately care for an aging population with chronic disease. This challenge comes beside a primary care workforce shortage and the high cost of chronic disease, which accounts for more than 75% of annual healthcare costs nationally. Five nurse-led innovations aimed at better managing chronic care are highlighted in a section called Transformation Models of Nursing Across Different Care Settings. One of the demonstration projects mentioned, for example, involves advanced practice nurses at a nurse-managed primary care health center in Texas. They oversee community health workers who provide intensive care coordination involving home visits and telephone calls to patients enrolled in a chronic disease management program. The interdisciplinary team takes into account social determinants of health and care delivery and involves engaging a community advisory board in implementing the program. There are already early indications that it's having a positive impact on health. Let's turn now to our interview with Donna Shalala, who led the initiative on the future of nursing at the Institute of Medicine.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Donna Shalala, U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services during the Clinton administration and currently president of the University of Miami. President Shalala is also chair of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Initiative on the Future of Nursing in America at the Institute of Medicine. Welcome, President Shalala. As Secretary of Health and Human Services, the longest-serving HHS secretary in U.S. history, I might add, there were many accomplishments, raising childhood immunization rates to the highest level in history, making health insurance available to millions of children through the SCHIP program, and improvements to Medicare, to name a few. But national health reform eluded the Clinton administration in which you served. As you look back, how was the environment different in the Obama administration from the Clinton administration that made it possible for health reform legislation to pass?
Well, first of all, he had the votes. He had both the Senate and the House. By the end of our first 2 years, we had lost both the Senate and the House. But initially, coming into the administration, We simply didn't get it done as quickly as the Obama administration did, didn't reach consensus. They essentially used existing platforms, existing programs, and handed over a lot of the coverage to the private sector to do with the states. So Obama's proposal was state-based, not the federal takeover everybody's been talking about, though there clearly are federal guidelines, but the states will organize the markets. The states will hand out the subsidies to people who can't afford to pay, most of whom are working, and the states will expand their existing programs, the Medicaid program in particular, to cover low-income workers.
President Shalala, Dr. Hari Feinberg, the president of the Institute of Medicine, has said that the possibility of strengthening the largest single component of the healthcare workforce, nurses, to become partners and leaders in improving the delivery of care and the healthcare system as a whole is what inspired the IOM to partner with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation in creating the Initiative on the Future of Nursing, which you, of course, have led and chaired. Now, that committee was formed in 2008, just before the health reform efforts got underway, so your work really played out against this backdrop of a huge national debate on healthcare. How did your own understanding of the fundamental issues in healthcare generally and in nursing specifically change over these 2 years?
Well, there's no question that if you want to cover a larger number of people, you're going to have to use every part of the healthcare workforce to their training. and nurses are fully able to absorb a very large number of people that will be coming into primary care. Working as partners with physicians, we simply don't have the physician workforce for primary care to be able to absorb the very large number of people, whether it's primary care, chronic care management, palliative end-of-life care. Nurses are trained to do these jobs, but they're restrained by rules in their states. If we could use nurses as part of this expansion, we'll have quality health care that we'll be able to deliver fairly quickly.
President Shalala, your committee drew together national leaders from healthcare, government, education, technology, and nursing. But in addition to exhaustive research, you took the committee on the road for a series of forums in L.A. and Houston and in Philadelphia. The forums seem to be designed to inform the committee about critical and varied roles that nurses play across settings. And you focused in on acute care, education, and community health. Tell us what was the consistent message you heard in those forums.
That nurses can do more, that they have the education, they need more education as we go forward, but they certainly have the education and the ability to take on larger roles in healthcare. That's what we heard consistently from one end of the country to the other, not simply from nurses, but from educators, from doctors, from other parts, other leaders in healthcare.
President Shalala, the committee recently released its report called The Future of Nursing, Leading Change, Advancing Health. It issued a set of 8 recommendations for action consistent with Dr. Feinberg's call for the initiative's conclusions to be a blueprint for action. And we'd like to explore a few of these recommendations in more depth, starting with recommendation number 1, remove scope of practice barriers. And you gave very specific directions to Congress, to the state legislatures, CMS, even the Federal Trade Commission on how to do this. But I think outside of the nursing profession, the issue probably just isn't part of public consciousness. Can you share with our listeners why the issue of barriers to scope of practice is such an important one in healthcare?
I think the American people would be surprised to learn that they've invested in nurses' education in their states, and yet there were states' restraints on how much nurses are allowed to do. In some states, like New Hampshire, for example, nurses are allowed to do everything that primary care doctors are, or at least 70% of what primary care doctors are allowed to do. They can write prescriptions. They can do diagnosis. They're obviously not specialists, but they can do referrals. Where in another state, Kansas, for example, or Ohio, or Florida, they're restrained from doing many of those things. Nurses can be in places like Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas, and on one side they can do more than they can do on the other side of the borderline. So this is unfair constraints given the fact that the public, the taxpayers, have invested in their training, have approved that training, have tested that training, but have unfair constraints on their ability to use that training. It's also a very expensive way to do healthcare. Mm-hmm. Invest in training. You ought to be able to use your education and training. You can go to some states and use it. In other states, there are restraints put on you.
President Shalala, the report makes strong recommendations for education, lifelong learning, and to prepare and enable nurses to lead change. You call for increasing the percentage of nurses with a bachelor's degree and doubling the number of nurses with a doctorate. But you also speak to the need for leadership training and business practice skills for nurses as essential to leading change. What did you hear from nurses and the healthcare community as a whole during your work that led you to focus on the ability to lead change as a vital, important skill for nurses?
Well, I think it's very important that nurses see themselves as partners, that that they see themselves as leaders, and their education and training has to include that as part of the curriculum. There's no question that they can step forward, that they're on the line, that they see patient care from a different perspective, that most patients' first contact and last contact is really with a nurse. We also called for 80% of the nurses to have bachelor's degrees. That doesn't mean that we think those programs should be expanded just in current 4-year colleges. We believe in community colleges across the country that they ought to be able to expand to four-year programs in nursing. That has already happened in a couple of places in Florida. We believe it will be very successful. Universities like mine are training the faculty for those places. The only way you're going to get to 80% is to have lots of parts of the educational system participating.
President Shalala, I actually had the pleasure of attending the Philadelphia Forum on the Future of Nursing and was your guest blogger for the event. Governor Rendell spoke very powerfully at that forum about his view that advanced practice nurses, and particularly nurse practitioners and midwives, were critical to his state's goals of improving access and also transforming care. And of course, Pennsylvania has been a leader in providing support to practices and health centers to transform care, particularly around chronic disease management. So this kind of executive leadership at the state level is obviously very helpful to carrying out your recommendations. Have you and the committee been involved in working with governors across the country in this effort? And is there a plan to help bring the many new governors and new members of Congress up to speed on these issues in this post-election period?
Yes, in fact, the Robert Wood Johnson program is going to underwrite the efforts to implement the report, and that means working with governors and state legislatures. I'm going to be talking to some state legislative leaders myself a little later this month and make the point that they really have to step up if they want to improve the quality, the breadth, the coverage of health care in their states.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Donna Shalala, former Secretary of Health and Human Services and currently chair of the Committee on the Future of Nursing at the Institute of Medicine. President Shalala, you started your career as a political science professor. We heard that every spring semester there in Miami, you teach a course covering the United States healthcare system, drawing on your expertise as serving as Secretary of Health and Human Services. With the changes in health reform, how's your lesson plan going to change?
Well, we're going to talk about the politics of implementation and the politics of change. What happens when you get a new Congress? They take a look at the legislation and say, maybe we want some changes here. It's hard to do changes before you've started the implementation process. So my students will be following both the politics and the economics of health care to see whether the new Congress and the voters have sent a message for some changes. I doubt there are going to be many changes, but I do think implementation is where the action's going to be.
That's going to be a fascinating class. President Shalala, we were particularly pleased to see recommendation number 3 in the report implement nurse residency programs to support the transition to practice for both new nurses and new advanced practice nurses. And parenthetically, our organization established America's first nurse practitioner residency program in primary care in 2007. And in that recommendation, you urged HRSA, CMS, and the foundations to fund the development and implementation of residency programs across all practice settings. Now, over the years, there have certainly been many calls to revise the legislation that governs the graduate medical education funding at the federal level, or GME, to allow these funds to be used for nurse residency programs. We're curious whether the committee considered that policy issue as a strategy to implement residency programs for nurses, and can you share some of the pros and cons if that was considered?
Well, you know, we certainly did consider it. We identified a source of funding in HRSA that could pay for these programs, but the truth is many of these programs don't cost much money, particularly the hospital-based ones. Hospitals can implement residency programs. All the evidence is that if you do that and pay close attention to the new group of nurses coming in, you'll reduce medical errors and you'll increase retention. And so these programs make a difference. It doesn't mean that someone isn't working. After all, these nurses have their licenses. But it does mean that you pay closer attention and put them through a residency program that will benefit your bottom line as well as the quality of health care you're able to provide.
President Shalala, you have a broad worldview through your entire career, starting as one of the early Peace Corps volunteers when you were assigned to Iran. We'd like to ask all of our guests this question. When you look around the world, what do you see in terms of innovations, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
You know, there's an enormous amount of innovation going on around the world. The use of nurse midwives in Peru, for example, to reduce mother and infant mortality. is very impressive. Here's a nation that doesn't have a lot of resources, but got their act together and got an integrated plan working with USAID and CARE to design a program that saves babies and their mothers by getting people into institutional settings, clinics, and hospitals to have their babies. In some of the poorest areas of Peru, 70% of mothers are giving birth in institutions. That has dramatically saved mothers' lives as well as children's lives. So there are impressive programs all over the world, not just in the industrialized countries, that are saving lives, that are improving. And we have programs in the United States that are innovative, using clinics combined with academic health centers, using midwife centers for the delivery of babies. But all of these require state law to be flexible so that we can improve the quality of care. We've made dramatic improvements in reducing medical errors in hospitals. There have been lots of quality initiatives. The fact that Don Berwick is now heading CMS, I think, mm-hmm. will make a big difference in leadership and in our understanding of improving the quality of healthcare.
Today, we've been speaking with Donna Shalala, who served as U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services from 1993 to 2001 under President Bill Clinton. She's currently president of the University of Miami, Florida, and chair of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Initiative on the Future of Nursing in America at the Institute of Medicine. President Shalala, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea comes from Peru, where Solidarity Hospitals are making essential health care services accessible and affordable for the country's poorest residents. Peru's health system has undergone substantial reform in the last decade, and the government now guarantees access to health care for all citizens. However, many Peruvians struggle to receive care because providers are scarce and often lack resources. Recognizing this gap in services, several Lima healthcare providers and entrepreneurs organized the Metropolitan System of Solidarity Hospitals. They opened the first Solidarity Hospital in 2003 in a converted bus and began providing basic health services to area residents. With the help of the local government, which encourages alternative healthcare providers, 23 hospitals have been opened in and around Lima. Built out of recycled shipping containers, the hospitals provide a wide variety of services, from prenatal care to infectious disease treatment. They remain self-funded through a daily high volume of patients, whom they charge modest fees. They also keep overhead expenses low. Peruvians are chronically underserved by state healthcare programs. In 2000, the country had roughly one hospital bed per 1,000 people, and 32% of the population was suffering from a disease, health condition, or accident, or had no access to care. Because of these groups in government systems, many Peruvians see the Solidarity Hospital as their only option for affordable, reliable health care. In its 7 years of operation, the hospitals have served over 4.5 million people. By fulfilling the need left unmet by the state health care programs, Solidarity Hospitals are democratizing access to affordable health care for all Peruvians. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.